going to go anywhere for them, that we were going to be there day in and day out. Workers were knocking across the picket line, and eventually the Port of Oakland ordered the Zim-operated Volants to leave the terminal.
The Electronic Intifada.
The Electronic Intifada.
The Electronic Intifada.
This is the Electronic Intifada podcast.
I'm Nora Barrows Friedman.
And I'm Asa Winstanley.
Welcome back to the Electronic Intifada podcast. For this episode, we wanted to focus on several direct actions that human rights advocates have been engaged in, especially since the attacks on Gaza in May. We're speaking with activists in the San Francisco Bay Area and Seattle about the Block the Boat actions, and in Chicago, where activists participated in a sit-in at the office of Congresswoman Jan Schakowsky.
And we'll feature a couple of short video interviews with members of Palestine Action in the UK who occupied the roof of an Israeli arms manufacturer. But first, let's go to the interview with Wasim Hajj and Aisha Mansour talking about Block the Boat.
We go to the west coast of the US and Canada, where for weeks, activists and labor organizers have been working hand in hand with dock workers and longshoremen unions to prevent the docking or unloading of cargo from vessels owned by the Israeli Zim shipping line. In early June, hundreds of activists and dock workers responded to an international call to action and successfully prevented an Israel-owned vessel from unloading its cargo at the Port of Oakland here in California. Protesters had prevented the ship from docking at Oakland for more than 2 weeks after its scheduled arrival date. The vessel ostensibly attempted to avoid the picket line. Jewish Voice for Peace tweeted, quote, "By refusing to unload Israeli cargo, Oakland workers are throwing a wrench in the Israeli economy and putting pressure on Israeli apartheid. Each day the Zim ship can't unload, the largest Israeli shipping company loses millions of dollars." Similar actions have been taken up and down the West Coast, including in Seattle, Washington, and in British Columbia. In Seattle on June 17th, 10 protesters were arrested for attempting to block a Zim ship. Let's get right into it. Joining us to talk about the Block the Boat actions over the last few weeks is Wasim Hajj of the Arab Resource and Organizing Center here in the Bay Area. AROC has been at the forefront of coordinating and organizing the direct actions. Also with us is Aisha Mansour of Palestiniyat up in Seattle. Thank you so much, Wasim and Aisha.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
So Aisha, I want to start with you. Seattle City Council members were in support of the Block the Boat protests, some of them at least, and had signed a statement of support. And at the protest itself, activists were attacked and arrested by cops. Can you talk about what happened?
Yeah, so after about 5 days of the Zim San Diego occupying a berth space at Terminal 18 in the Port of Seattle, city council members, at least three, and two representatives from Washington State as a whole, asked the mayor to send the Zim San Diego back. And I should say also 11 protesters were actually arrested, not 10.
Thanks for that clarification, yes. Talk about the protest itself. What happened when protesters were arrested, and kind of explain what happened at that protest.
Yeah, so on June 17th, we organized our second community picket. This was after multiple folks had asked the Zim San Diego to leave, and out of protest, they decided to stay. Ooh, I'm so sorry about that. And we, you know, nonviolently organized an action. There were two community picket lines, basically walking in a circle, and the police decided to escalate and attacked 11 protesters and violently arrested them. One person was arrested under a bicycle, and he's still facing, you know, he's still going to the doctor and trying to get medical care for that. So
unbelievable. And I mean, it kind of reminds me of the WTO protests, the Battle of Seattle, where people were protesting against, you know, the flow of capital and you know, these large corporations that run, you know, the country and imperialist designs on the rest of the world. And they were attacked and brutalized by cops. What were the protesters released from arrest. What's happened since then?
Yeah, by the morning they were all released. No charges have been filed. And right now we're deciding whether we want to publicly put pressure on the city to drop those charges or not. So far for the past year, most protesters haven't had charges filed against them. So if this does happen, then that would be a precedent for the way that Seattle responds to Palestinians and our organizing. But as a whole, like, the message was clear, right? Like, Seattle community members stood in solidarity with Palestinians time and time again, and they were willing to risk their lives for it up against police brutality. And the only way that the Zim ship was going to be unloaded on June 17th was through police brutality.
Waseem, I want to bring you in. Talk about the initial direct action that happened here in Oakland in early June. It was monumental to actually watch this enormous cargo vessel being forced to pull out of the Oakland port with its load intact after not being able to dock for more than 2 weeks. Talk about the significance of this victory and how it set the stage for other protests we've seen in the weeks since up and down the California, you know, and in Washington and Canadian coast.
Yeah, so the most recent victory that happened in early June, it was June 4th was the day, I believe, comes 7 years after AROC and community allies blocked an Israeli Zim ship in 2014. And since then, no Israeli Zim ship had returned to the Port of Oakland. Until 2021, actually, when Zim had some restructuring internally, they were going through a lot of financial troubles, and they opened up a new e-commerce line, which was using commerce between the US and China through Alibaba and Amazon and a couple other digital commerce vendors to, for the first time since 2014, bring Zim back to Oakland, or attempt to bring Zim back to Oakland. We mobilized our communities, and a Zim-operated vessel called the Volence was originally scheduled to dock in Oakland in late May, went down to LA, which we suspect is because they understood what was waiting for them if they tried to dock, and then returned and was delayed following our announcement to mobilize for about 10 days out in the bay, out in the Pacific Ocean. And in the meantime, what had ended up happening while they were delayed was we understood this as a moment of tremendous opportunity as well as vulnerability for the rank and file workers with the ILW Local 10. There are our longshoremen's union that we understood as being sort of a critical part in any successful direct action blocking of Zim. We wanted to give them international support. So we put out an international call to action June 2nd to June 9th, calling for community pickets and solidarity actions targeting Israeli operated ships coming from this company, Zim, as well as other companies that are on the BDS list. So for example, in Houston, they did something targeting Caterpillar, targeting Raytheon as well. And we wanted to show the workers in the ILW Local 10 and port workers all around the West Coast that, hey, look, this is, if you're going to go and stand with us on this and not cross our picket line, you have the whole world behind us. You have organized labor from here to New York. We have organized labor from here all around the Bay, all the way in Greece, in Italy, in South Africa, most especially. It was a huge honor. We were endorsed by COSATU, which is the Congress of South African Trade Unions, which represents over 1.8 million workers in South Africa. And we understand, you know, the blocking of Zim ships is being intimately tied to this history of internationalist solidarity against apartheid, against ethnic cleansing, where refusal to unload cargo ships was a huge part of the South African boycott campaign. We understand our BDS and pro-Palestine boycotts as following in that same internationalist tradition. So on June 4th, when the ship docked and we had a community picket, it was 6 gates that we had to block. No worker crossed the picket line, no trucker crossed the picket line. Rank and file members of the ILWU were standing by and did not cross, and the ship was not worked in a morning shift. And in the afternoon shift, they finally relented. They understood that this wasn't going to go anywhere for them, that we were going to be there day in and day out. Workers were knocking across the picket line, and eventually the Port of Oakland ordered the Zim-operated Volants to leave the terminal. And it was just super beautiful moment. I was doing some social media stuff the day of, and my friend next to me like screamed, and I was like, what? And like turned, and the ship was like swiveling around. So we like climbed on top of a truck to get the video. And it was super cool to get to see it go like with our own eyes.
Yeah. Right. And we don't want to forget the ports in Houston and on the East Coast, New York and New Jersey ports. I believe also Philadelphia were involved. Aisha, can you talk a little bit about how the significance of this very internationalist direct action that has actual material effects on Israeli apartheid and that flow of capital, you know, to sustain, you know, that the apartheid state. Talk about, how it was, what it was like being a part of this international direct action.
Yeah, it's been beautiful to see in Seattle. So, you know, as we know, Zim is a publicly owned Israeli company, and they were instrumental in bringing settlers to Palestine and actually establishing the state of Israel. So, and you know, that displaced my family and my ancestors, and now they export weaponry all over the world. So that was the way that we framed it within Seattle. And it's had an impact, right? Recently, the Seattle Education Association passed a resolution endorsing BDS and the campaign to end the deadly exchange, which would stop police trainings by the Israeli occupation forces, which was unprecedented. No one saw that coming in Seattle. We also had, you know, multiple city council members now willing to talk about BDS and showing up at our protest, and Palestiniyat organized a rally before Block the Boat, and it was the largest pro-Palestinian rally that Seattle has ever seen. So the tide is definitely changing up here, and I think so much of that has to do with BDS as a whole, but Block the Boat more specifically.
Wasim, do we have any calculation or like a ballpark figure for how many millions of dollars these direct actions actually cost the Israeli Zim shipping company?
Unfortunately, that sort of thing at this moment is really hard to measure, and it's really hard to quantify. This depends on things like, you know, fuel costs on the day-to-day, how much they are spending on their crew. These things are pretty opaque to us at this moment, and it's not going to be, I think, until we can see some financial records, internal records from Zim. They're a publicly traded company, so those records are going to be publicly available eventually, that might give us a clue as to what the actual numerical impact was. I think strategically, what we've done here is we've set ourselves up for more actions against Zim and for other places to take direct action against this shipping company. We've revealed sort of a pressure points in their whole, you know, global logistics operation, where activists and BDS organizers around the world can say, well, that is a viable target. This is a viable strategy for targeting them. And especially, you know, putting on as a BDS sort of campaign, the goal is to not just, you know, is not to just play whack-a-mole with Zim ships, but to, you know, make companies who are looking at doing business with Zim take a second look and say, well, is this really worth it to us? And I think that over the long term, that sort of is going to make or break what strategic impact on this apartheid profiteering company is going to be.
Yeah. Kind of just in general, I mean, you know, for decades, the US and of course corporations have been working very hard to break labor union strength and power, and, you know, pit workers against each other and split unions. The ILWU seems like it's kind of one of the last, you know, real solidarity focused unions where workers, you know, one member of, you know, the ILWU somewhere is in solidarity with other dock workers, not just, you know, locally, but nationally and then internationally. Can you talk a little bit about how important it is to, you know, do these, like, just the work of organizing workers and activists, and how you see that going forward?
I think that one thing that I think on the left we sort of miss, we underestimate, is the sort of the embeddedness of organized labor within a community and the relationships, therefore, that community organizations have with organized labor. I think one thing that's really critical to keep in mind here is that we're not only understanding labor as a strategic means to an end, but as working people, as being, and their liberation as the ends to itself, right? So the Palestine and the liberation of Palestine is a workers' issue, and it's a working class people that is oppressed by a bourgeois capitalist state. And that's something we have to keep in mind, as well as that these workers and the people that we're calling on to take these tremendous risks need support, and they need defense, and their movements and their livelihood is dependent on the communities that they're embedded in defending them at all costs, helping them build power, helping them execute power. There is currently a lot of legislation that, you know, for all the things we can criticize Biden for and his administration, which there are, you know, myriad. There's some pretty good
list.
Yeah. I mean, especially on Palestine, right? Yeah. But there's a pretty good labor package, the PRO Act, and all of its associated legislation that's going to do a lot, I think, to provide some cover for labor organizers, especially those who are sitting in, like, these extremely, right-wing, you know, authoritarian, you know, Republican-run states where it's basically like a one-party system, and organized labor is under constant attack, constantly weakened in their bargaining power and their ability to organize.
I do want to ask you a little bit about Falastiniyat and its role in local organizing in Seattle, and, you know, how people are, you know, coming together in cities like Seattle or in Oakland, and working with, you know, working class communities, and you know, how are people able to center Palestine right now?
Yeah, well, Falastiniyat has been around a lot longer than I think that we say it has. We were formally created about a year ago after our Day of Rage protest. And we're a grassroots feminist collective. We were born simultaneously with the Palestinian Feminist Collective. But Seattle, we've been mostly focused on the End the Deadly Exchange campaign, and we've been involved with ILPS. So we have a really strong feminist and anti-imperialist analysis, and we're centering workers in that, and we're centering women in that, and queer people in that. So most of our work so far has been around Block the Boat and the Deadly Exchange, BDS on campuses. We've been tapped into Seattle University and Western Washington University and the University of Washington. But recently we've grown quite a bit, and so we'll see what comes in the next year or so. But for right now, we're pretty at capacity.
Yeah, that's a lot that you've taken under. finally, Wasim, what's the next step? You know, after the Zim whack-a-mole, what's the next step in terms of organizing and really trying, you know? I mean, in 2014, as you said, you know, Zim was not allowed to dock. They could not dock at Oakland, and they tried again. Does this mean that, you know, hopefully they will stop trying altogether? What's the next step here?
Well, it's unclear to us whether Zim is coming back to Oakland. The Central China e-commerce express line that the Volens was a part of has now been removed from their website, which was a really cool moment where this was even before we did the action on the Volens. It's unclear if they're doing that as a way to prevent us from tracking their ships, or if it's an admission of defeat where they're not going to be returning to Oakland. In terms of next steps for us, I think it really comes down to, assessing, strategic, wins, where we can improve, and making relationships with organizations like Felicidad, places, people like Within Our Lifetime in New York, Palestine Youth Movement, USPCN, all around the country, and sort of developing people's skills and organizing with labor, getting relationships with organized labor, building that solidarity, building this shared struggle, this shared mutual defense up, and then we'll see what we can do.
And if people want to get in touch with AROC and join up with some of your actions, how can they do that?
If people want to get involved with AROC or join up, you can message us at info@araborganizing.org, info@araborganizing.org. And you can find us on Twitter as well, twitter.com/AROC Bay Area. All one word, AROC Bay Area. And we are on Instagram also with the same tag. It's AROC_Bay Area on Instagram.
And Aisha, how can people get in touch and link up with Felicidad?
DM us on Twitter or on Instagram. We'll respond. So especially if you're in the Seattle area, we would love to work with you.
Wonderful. And what's your handle once again?
Felicidad, one word.
Wonderful. Aisha Mansour and Wasim Hajj, thank you so much for all the work that you're both doing. And you're always welcome on the Electronic Intifada podcast. Thanks so much.
Thank you for having us.
It was a pleasure. Thanks, Laura.
Up next, we feature a couple of short interviews with two members of Palestine Action in the UK, conducted by the Electronic Intifada's contributor Mohammed Almazi in late May. Now, Palestine Action is a relatively new group which has been working to take direct action to go beyond demonstrations, or to provide a different role from demonstrations and campaigning, a different form of campaigning, direct action. So their usual strategy is to target Israeli arms manufacturers who in the UK by shutting down their factories in various ways, by occupying their rooftops, spraying red paint on them to represent the blood of Palestinians. And they've been targeting most of all Elbit, the major Israeli arms manufacturer. It's Israel's largest private arms manufacturer, which has, I believe it's 10 different sites, factories and offices in the UK. And so they've been, especially since the Israeli assault on the Gaza Strip in May, they've been really stepping up their campaigns, and they've been having lots of people join them, and more people have been joining them. And local people have been supporting them, you know, demonstrating outside the factories in support of the activists on the rooftops and things like that. So they've been causing a lot of waves.
A lot of good trouble. Yeah. Let's go to those interviews conducted by Mohammed Almazi.
My name is Fahad Ulusu, and I was in Leicester last week in order to take over the roof of one of UAV tactical manufacturer army drone company in Leicester. That's where I was last week.
And why did you do that?
Mainly because of the conflict right now between Israel and Gaza. Watching it on a daily basis on the news and the newspaper just made me really alarmed and concerned about what's going on, and just give me a nudge about doing something about it instead of just being a bystander.
And you lasted 6 days?
I was there 6 days on top of the roof. We came down on Tuesday, correct.
And how did you come down?
Well, the UK removal The UK removal team just took us down.
There's the protest removal team?
Protest removal team, that's right. The protest removal team just took us all down, took us, both of us down, and then we were put into custody in Leicester police station, Euston Street police station.
And I understand that as the police were trying to remove you, there were lots of supporters outside trying to stop them. Can you just discuss that?
All I can see was just a crowd in front of the gate trying to block the entrance. The police were reassuring me that nothing's going to happen to me. They were thinking that the crowd will probably hijack or kidnap me. But I was more worried about their safety than mine, to be honest. I knew I was safe. But we stood for at least four hours by the gates. We couldn't leave the location because of the resistance of the crowd, which was, to me, just an act of love and celebration rather than a protest.
I'm Richard Barnard, co-founder of Palestine Action. Today I was in court for trumped up fictitious charges of blackmail. Apparently, according to the British police and state, it was a blackmail against LaSalle Investment Management, who are a property management company who own premises and rent them. They're the landlords of Elbit Systems, the evil Israeli arms manufacturer that, as we've seen in this past week, has been occupied twice by Palestine Action. These charges are completely fictitious. I got the papers today. My legal team are kind of virtually laughing about how ridiculous they are, relating to a video that was published of me calling for a hunger strike outside their offices, and associated actions that have been done by people in various places against this company to ask them or to force them to evict Elbit Systems. Interestingly, in court, the prosecution and the magistrates have taken off all my bail conditions. So the police put strict bail conditions on me on a curfew. I think the magistrates and even the prosecution think this was ridiculous, bearing in mind the fictitious nature of the charges, and therefore I'm released on unconditional bail. I have no conditions left on me. Obviously, I will continue to fight these charges, and if anything, I expect them to be dropped by the police, because they're just further evidence of their underhand way of colluding with the Israeli apartheid regime, probably through the instruments of the British government that, as we know, has been party to the Israeli apartheid regime and in fact started it by giving away the Palestinians' land and the Balfour Agreement. And therefore, we will continue to fight back as Palestine Action. Elbit Systems are our main principal target, being an arms company that literally makes drones. And as we saw this week in Leicester, we actually saw a drone that was probably used in Gaza recently. And we will continue to shut these factories down until we end their business here and they leave these shores, and we contribute to the bringing down of the Israeli apartheid regime. We'll then go on to other companies. And I just call on all people to continue to join Palestine Action, continue to take action against this evil company that produces these evil weapons on our doorsteps. So my trial has been referred to Snaresbrook Crown Court on the 28th of June, when I will enter a plea, and my plea will be not guilty. And there's some indication that this trial will try to be joined to a wider conspiracy that I've been charged with, along with other members of Palestine Action. And we will vigorously defend ourselves, because we know that what we did is the right thing. To damage, to disrupt the business of this evil company is the right and moral thing to do. Whatever the law may say, we don't think of ourselves as criminals. We think of ourselves as dismantling the war machine and the Israeli apartheid regime from where it started here.
And finally, we go to Chicago, where activists with the U.S. Palestinian Community Network engaged in a sit-in protest at the offices of Congresswoman Jan Schakowsky. First up is a short video about the action, and then we'll go to the interview I did recently with Hussam Marajda of USPCN.
There is a bill in Congress called H.R. 2590, the Palestinian Children and Families Act. This bill would do the bare minimum of seeking oversight on the unconditional aid that we give to Israel every single year.
It has been signed on by four members of the Illinois delegation: Representative Chuy Garcia, Congresswoman Marie Newman, Bobby Rush, and Danny Davis. If you notice, a so-called Illinois progressive is missing from that list. Congresswoman Jan Schakowsky, who considers herself a progressive, has been embarrassingly silent on the torture and imprisonment of Palestinian children, which is why USPCN and our allies held a sit-in at her office yesterday.
And at least co-sponsored that bill.
On one bill, and ignored all the work that I have done to condemn the nation of Israel and the things that it has done.
What else is there, Congresswoman? There hasn't been any legislation. We finally have some legislation that has a little bit of support.
To talk to my friends in the Congress, Ayanna and Ilhan and AOC.
Congresswoman, I know all of your friends in Congress, and I know all of your friends in Chicago. And that's why we're telling you that we've given you a pass for way too long. So what you should do is you should talk to Chewy, and you should talk to Marie, and you should talk to Bobby, and you should talk to Danny, and you should ask them why they signed it and why you're refusing to sign it.
And we have many, many representatives right here in the state of Illinois that have still not signed on. Bill Foster, Sean Kasten, and Jan Schakowsky. So I'm encouraging all of you, call your members of Congress and tell them to support HR 2590.
And I'm joined today by Hussam Marajda. He's with the U.S. Palestinian Community Network in Chicago. Hussam, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. It's truly an honor to be on EI.
Thank you. So you were you took part in a sit-in at Representative Janet Schakowsky's office in early June. Talk about that sit-in. Tell us why you took that action and what you were demanding from this congressperson.
Yeah, so U.S. Palestinian Community Network or USPCN, we led a sit-in at Jan Schakowsky's office. She's a U.S. rep for, I think, about three decades now. There was about 20 to 25 of us, mostly Arabs, but we've had allies from the Black Liberation Movement, from the Immigrant Rights Movement. We had student groups and, like Freedom Road Socialist Organization. So we had some allies with us as well. We went inside. Actually, they just they were remote until this week. So this is the first week they're back in the office. And we went inside and we sat on the floor and we demanded to speak to the Congresswoman. And we were told that, she's in a committee meeting. We knew she was in DC, but we were told that she's in a committee hearing, a committee meeting and she cannot speak. So we said, okay, we'll wait. We'll wait until she's available. And we started chanting. And to our surprise, less than five minutes, they got her on the phone. We thought you said she's not available, but she's on the phone in 5 minutes. So Hatem Abudaya, who is the national chair of USPCN and a member of USPCN in Chicago, spoke to her on the phone and explained to her why we're here. And we were demanding that she supports and signs on to HR 2590, the Palestinian Children and Families Act, which will condition aid to Israel as long as they're imprisoning and torturing children and annexing Palestinian land. She refused to commit at all. So she was instead just, talking about how she previously criticized the state of Israel, how she boycotted, Netanyahu. And so we said, these are symbolic stances and you have not taken any real tangible stances. And there are five members of the Illinois delegation who have signed on to this bill. And so you claim to be a progressive. Why aren't you signing on? So that was our demand for her to sign on to.
That's great. And of course, the bill you're talking about is co-authored by Betty McCollum of Minnesota.
Right.
And it's interesting because Betty McCollum isn't
necessarily one of the most progressive, you know, members of Congress. She's definitely, you know, taken this pretty, you know, this good and correct stance on Israeli crimes against Palestinians. But these other members of Congress who, you know, who say that they're progressive, but then completely ignore Palestine, you know, how does USPCN and other activists in the coalition, you know, why is it so important to pressure members of Congress like Schakowsky, you know, to take a stand where they haven't before?
Yeah, you know, she has gotten, like, you know, Jan has gotten a pass from us for on Palestine for years, right? Because she's relatively good on other issues we care about also, right? We don't like live single issue lives and single issue struggles. And so, but our sit-ins, you know, the sit-in we had is just the first, right, in a series of escalation. And so it's important to continue to target her, because, like, enough is enough. Like, you know, Israel is escalating. The narrative is changing. And so why aren't you, you know, like, if you claim to be a progressive and you say, you know, I stand for this and I stand for this, and she stands for a lot of good stuff, good issues and good causes, but, like, on Palestine, she's, like, silent always and, you know, has done anything. And so it's, you know, if to get somebody like her, of course, very, you know, she's been in Congress for a long time. She, you know, she has some influence, and to get someone like her to sign on to it is historic, right? And so 24 people already co-sponsored it. And so what is stopping others from doing it, right? And pressuring them in the time where, you know, like, is enough. Like, the whole world is starting to see the real Israel. Even like the media is shifting their stances. The mainstream media is even shifting their stances on Israel, and they're now like, wow, you know, maybe Israel is out of control. And so, like, when all these you know, even, and you have the Squad and you have different, you know, progressive you know, Congress people and previous, you know, presidential candidates all speaking up. So what's stopping you from not only speaking up, but actually signing on to legislation? Like, there hasn't been any legislation before until now. And so this is, like, the bare minimum to say, you know what, I am against torture of Palestinian children. I am against imprisoning of Palestinian children. Like, that's very, very minimum. I think that, like, it's a universal agreement that we all can agree on, that, like, children should not be imprisoned and should not be tortured. And so what does that say about them if they're not supporting that or signing on to it, you know?
Right. Talk about how this kind of direct action fits within the broader political activism lens, like the Block the Boat protests and other grassroots moves. You know, as the narrative is sort of shifting, as you said, so is the, you know, the growth of the BDS movement worldwide. Can you talk about why this kind of action is so important?
Yeah, of course. Our chapter in the Bay Area has, you know, is part of the Block the Boat Coalition, and that inspired us to kind of think about, like, some of these advanced actions, you know, in different cities here in Chicago, and we took a little bit part of it in Detroit as well, the Block the Boat. But you know, the strategy here to pass HR 2590, right? And it was led on an organizational level by Defense of Children International Palestine, right? American Friends Services Committee, and they want to move Congress people. And so what we can provide as USPCN is we can help diversify the tactics, right? The strategy is to pass it and the tactic can be different. And so for us, applying different kinds of pressure that, you know, maybe somebody like Schakowsky and others might not expect, right? It's sometimes it's protest, and sometimes it's, you know, direct actions and civil disobedience. Sometimes it's raising awareness by, like, dropping banners or, like, having an LED truck, for example, drive around the city, which these things we also did this past week. We actually dropped 3 banners in Chicago. One of them, you know, was targeting Schakowsky in her district as well. So it's an escalation of tactics, right? The movement is making it very, very clear to Schakowsky right? And others that like, we're gonna hold you accountable for your silence. Like the time, like you no longer can be silent without, you know, without consequences, without getting pressure for us, right? You don't get to be in a position of power, claim you're a progressive, and stay silent as Israel continues, you know, the mass killings, the ethnic cleansing, and imprisonment of Palestinians and an entire population. And so you don't get to be in a position of power without being held accountable by, you know, by your constituents and community members and community leaders, right? Enough is enough. And, you know, Israel is, like I said, Israel is escalating, and yeah, we have no other choice but to do the same. You know, there's Sheikh Jarrah, the ethnic cleansing there is still happening in Sinwan, and you know, and we kind of, you know, got out. Okay, now we can't get, you know, 10,000 people in the streets, you know, anymore, but we could do other things that, you know, continue to put pressure. And so these actions like Block the Boat are very, and the sit-ins that we did and other die-ins, and they're confrontational, right? And that's what makes them really, really critical and important, because they make more noise and they make more, you know, they make more people and people in power uncomfortable. And so we've been patient and we were, you know, and we've seen that, you know, being patient with Schakowsky and giving her the benefit of the doubt doesn't work majority of the time. And so, you know, sometimes these actions will stop, you know, the business as usual. And so us being patient is not going to work. We're going to go some, you know, doing something else that put more pressure on you. And so what's beautiful about BDS, Block the Boat, and is that they directly, like BDS in general, and, you know, Block the Boat in particular, is they directly hurt the pockets of those who are profiting from the occupation, right? It hits them where it hurts most. And similarly, having a sit-in at a representative's office, for example, also says no business as usual. It interrupts the daily work of the politicians, of their staff, and forces them to speak to you, forces them to hear you, and to make them aware that, hey, we are here, we're not going away. You know what I mean? And I don't know if you've seen the video, and I encourage everyone to go and see it. It's on USPCN's Facebook page, the live video. And there was at some point where we're chanting and her staff was complaining that she couldn't answer the phone and she couldn't hear the phone. And then one of our members, Mohammed, said, there's no business as usual. You know, you don't get to just like complain about your phone calls when there's people being tortured and people being killed as we speak. So that was a really powerful moment that we had there.
Yeah, and we'll link to the full video. We're showing excerpts now, but we'll link to the full video on the podcast post that accompanies this. Finally, Hussam, how can activists in Chicago and around the US join in these kinds of actions? And what advice do you have for other activist groups who want to challenge their representative stance on Palestinian rights?
Yeah, I think it's always a good time to join a Palestinian and Arab organization like USPCN, right? And if you're not Arab, you could become a friend of USPCN. We have that option, right? We have active chapters in 8 major states and members in 2 dozen others, right? Go to our website, visit our social media, you know, reach out to us, you know, let us know if, you know, if you'd like to get involved, you'd like to become a general member and stuff like that, right? Especially now, like after an uprising, it's a really good time to continue these pressures and continue to diversify our tactics and you know, put more pressures on people like Schakowsky and others. And so, you know, if you're not part of an organization, if you'd like to join USPCN, you know, reach out to us, let us know. There's going to be, you know, like this is like, after uprising, it's like, okay, you know, when there's an uprising, everyone is on the streets, everyone is pumped, everyone wants to do something, but like the challenging part is the organizing that starts after that, right? And so it's really, you know, it's really the ugly kind of, we call it the ugly part of organizing. It's not the sexy and attractive one type of organizing that we see online. This is the tough one, right? This is the, all right, let's build campaigns, right? Let's go into our community. Let's start like building our base and developing leaders in our community that who are going to continue fighting and carrying the fight onwards, you know, and this is the best time. So I, you know, I was a student, I was just finished my freshman year of college in 2014. So the summer of 2014 was the end. And then 2014 in the fall, I returned to school. This was after the Gaza, you know, the bombing of Gaza of 2014. The students for Justice in Palestine chapters, for example, were like the numbers of members spiked. Yeah. And so there was a lot of like, you know, divestment campaigns. It was a lot of boycott campaigns on campuses and beyond. And so I kind of expect to see the same here, and not only on campus, but everywhere, right? And so there's going to be a lot of new BDS campaigns. There's going to be a lot of new, you know, community-based campaigns, and you know, start a campaign. You know, that's my advice to other groups. If you don't have a campaign, start a campaign. You can literally, you know, do it anywhere in the country, and you can find somebody to target. And if you don't want to start a campaign or you can't, you could always join a campaign like HR 2590. You know, it is the best time now, because you gotta hit the iron while it's hot, you know, yeah. Like we say. So it's historic. This legislation is historic, and 24 people are signing on to it. We, you know, is really unprecedented. And so that, you know, if we can get much more votes and much more support for it, it will change the narrative. It will change the way that we talk about Israel, and it will also cut aid to Israel. So,
yeah. Material benefits to not exactly. Just, you know, changing the narrative.
Exactly.
Hussein Marajda, you're with the U.S. Palestinian Community Network, USPCN. Thank you so much for all that you do and for being there and for being with us on the Electronic Intifada podcast.
Thank you very much. I appreciate you guys having me. Thank you.
Thanks for watching this video. Please subscribe to our YouTube channel. Hit like, leave a comment. These engagements help us with the YouTube algorithm, and it helps us to get around Silicon Valley censorship as much as possible. It does make a difference. You can also support our journalism by going to electronicintifada.net and clicking on donate now. Thank you.